In our letter from Philippians, we hear a passage from this letter this morning. Paul's in prison. Paul's in prison more than once, in more than one place. And if when he writes this letter, he is in prison in Ephesus, one day he's going to be released. If he's in prison in Rome, it's going to end with the executioner. But Paul doesn't know that when he writes this letter. He doesn't know how it's going to end. And the people who love him don't know either. And they are grieving what has happened to him. And he writes them a letter. He writes them maybe more than one letter to encourage them, to console them. And what he's trying to do is say, there are things that really matter, and there are things that don't. And if we can hold on to the things that matter and let go of what we can, we'll be okay. I'll be okay, and you'll be okay. And in this passage we hear this morning, Paul is taking that way of thinking and he's turning it into his own life. He says, if anyone has reason to boast in the flesh, I do. I was circumcised on the eighth day, of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew speaker whose parents were Hebrew speakers. What he's saying is that in a world where it had become complicated to be a Jew who kept the law, who observed Torah, where the language of power, the language of economic opportunity, the language of getting ahead in the world was Greek. And that was the way of being and the way of acting that promised something for a child. His parents taught him to speak Hebrew, taught him to speak the language of their people, the language of the prophets. And they observed the law. They had him circumcised in the way that he was to be circumcised. He was of the people, even in a world that made it really difficult to be of the people. And he says, regarding the law, I was a Pharisee. We're used to hearing that in a particular way. We're used to hearing that as a kind of self-accusation. Because I think when we hear Pharisee, we think hypocrite. We think a person who puts ritual purity out as a way of holding people down, or even of holding people away from God. That way of thinking about the Pharisees would have made no sense at all to Paul. In Paul's day, Pharisees were people within Judaism who took the law seriously, who believed that if God's covenant with God's people meant living in a certain way, that should touch every corner of our lives. And someone should guide people through that, figuring out how to live. And they were really concerned for how you take ideas about being pure, being ritually pure, being right before the law, and translating that into something that common people could do. We don't actually know that much about the Pharisees, but we actually have a good example of that kind of thinking. Carrying food between houses was work. It was something that you weren't supposed to do on the Sabbath. You weren't supposed to carry food from one house to another. But eating as a community really matters. And the Sabbath is the only time you can do that, because the rest of the time you're working. And it's Pharisees who say, well, why don't you just put up doorposts between your houses, and then we'll call the whole block a house, and you can carry food wherever you like, and you can eat together. So for Paul, to say that you're a Pharisee is to say that you're the sort of person who was admired by Jews. Sometimes even admired as a person who stood against the aristocrats, stood against the elite who had been thoroughly co-opted by Rome. That's the kind of person you were. And he says, as to zeal, I was a persecutor of the church. And here I think it's helpful to remember that Paul actually speaks admiringly in other letters of Jews for their zeal for God. Why does Jesus turn over the tables in the temple? He turns them over for zeal. And zeal can also be almost a technical term. It's a sort of person. It is a person who sometimes will even resort to violence to defend the faith. And that could be a frightening aspect of Jewish culture in the first century. But it was not something that people looked at and said, this is bad. He says, as to righteousness before the law, I was blameless. Paul has a lot to say about the law across his letters. But I want us to take the risk of listening to what he says here and what he says plainly and without nuancing it. Paul says that as to righteousness before the law, I was blameless. God gave the people a law so that they would know they were in right relationship with God, a way of living, and it wasn't easy. But Paul can say that as to the righteousness I could have in that law, before that law, I did it. Maybe not everybody did it, but I was blameless. So what I hope you hear is that in this list he makes of reasons that he might boast in the flesh, he means that seriously. These are reasons a person like Paul could boast, and for good reason. But then it turns. Whatever gains I had in the flesh, I've come to count them as loss. I've come to count them as loss because of the value of knowing Christ. He means things that really meant something, things that were good, things that made him a person who was respected, who had a family who understood him and admired him, and a community that understood him and admired him, and then gave him a nation where he had a place. those things are loss when he compares them to what he has gained by knowing Christ. Those things, all of those things, can be set aside because Jesus has made him his own. I mean, do you hear how astonishing that is? He's saying, I can let go of my whole life, not because it was bad, but because what I have found, because what I have found, what has found me, is so good. And my question is, what if you and I were free like that? What if you and I were free like that? What if we could look at our lives like that and say, that's good. That was good. I'm not ashamed of that. But I don't need it anymore. I don't need that anymore because the power of the resurrection has found me. We've been talking a lot, we hear a lot about freedom, about what our freedom means, about what our freedom costs. We talk about that a lot when things are going wrong. But what would it be like if we were free like this? Because every time I look at the news, every time I turn on my computer, I see a face looking back at me, one of the people dead in Vegas. Or I see all their faces, like this quilt of faces. I think we've all been looking at that all week. And I wonder, if we could trust this, if we could trust the hope that Paul is holding out to us, that he's holding out to us from prison and the shadow of the executioner, if we could hold on to the hope that could let him release everything he thought was true about himself, if we could take hold of that kind of hope, if we could risk the kind of grief that puts the way we live at stake, the kind of grief that says, there is something that I hold that matters to me, that stands between us and the end of the kind of pain and loss we see unfolding all around us. That there is something in me between myself and the end of that. And we don't have to say that it's bad, and we don't have to say that we're ashamed of it. But we might have to say that we need to let it go to lay claim to something better. Whatever that might be. So I ask you, what would be in your list if you were going to make Paul's kind of list? What might be in that list? Those things that we hold closely that make us us. but that might be between us and the kind of radical renunciation of violence that is the hope of never having to look at another quilt of faces of the massacred again. That, I think, is the question that hovers over us when we hold the letters of Paul up against ourselves and the world we see around us. And that's what I want to leave you with this morning. Amen.